Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are you feeling today?
Moving a little bit slow. Our Monday routine, typically we get started at 5:30 in the morning. Holly hops into the limo. I send her off to the work so I can come down here and play with you.
That's right.
But the limo came at 4:30, so we woke up at 3:30. So if I'm moving a little slow this morning, that's what's going on.
It's a long day for you.
But we got to keep Holly employed. We got to keep IBM happy so that I can keep doing this with you.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a small price to pay.
Yeah. We got a great show lined up this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from Derek Van Dam with Swipe for Change, get caught up with what those guys are up to. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the CEO of Girl Scouts of Greater Atlanta, Miss Marilyn Midyette. Welcome to the show, Marilyn.
Good morning, Stone. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we are glad to have you. Girl Scouts of Greater Atlanta, we've all had some contact with Girl Scouts. In fact, I bought cookies as recently as yesterday. I put my order in.
You're the man.
how many boxes did you?
Well, I bought two boxes from Sarah June, and then the girl across the street came over and sold some boxes to the girl. So we'll end up across four or five different young ladies in the neighborhood, at church, and other things that we're tapped into. We'll end up with a good dozen or so boxes, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're up to 20 at our house.
I mean, you're such an easy mark.
Yeah, we... there's a program now. I don't know if this is on all of the Girl Scouts, but one of the girls that came by said that you can donate to the troops.
Absolutely, you can, to the military men and women serving our country overseas. And it sounds like you guys are doing your job to help contribute towards the 4 million boxes of cookies we sell just in our council alone.
Wow, 4 million.
4 million.
Wow. And this is the 100th anniversary of Girl Scouts? Is that the case?
That's right, Stone. Girl Scouts was founded in Savannah in this country by a woman by the name of Juliet Gordon Lowe in March of 1912. So we are coming up on our 100th anniversary right around the corner here, and we're delighted.
And so how will you celebrate that?
There are a lot of things going on nationwide. In fact, we've dubbed the year of 2012 the year of the girl, and that's really all about recognizing both girls' leadership potential and our commitment to their development. In fact, on January 31st, we're going to have a big campaign kickoff in Times Center in New York City. The next day, we'll be on Capitol Hill in Washington with all the legislators taking the pledge to support the Year of the Girl and a commitment to girls' leadership development.
So what do you know about Girl Scouts, Lee? Were you a Girl Scout ever?
No, I got kicked out as a brownie. I thought that they just had brownies. I didn't know that was the organization. But a question regarding the cookies. I think that's a brilliant way to teach people how to sell. And I think I commend you guys on that. It kind of bugs me. This is a pet peeve that when the parents are selling it for the girls, how do you communicate to the troops to, you know, kind of dissuade them from doing that? I know you have goals to sell a certain amount of cookies, and that's good. But I think that you have an opportunity to sell something that's easy to sell. So you're giving a kid an experience that's not a bad selling experience, because selling is hard and you're giving them something easy to sell. But when a parent is selling it for the kid, it kind of takes away a little bit about, you know, what I think your intention are for them doing this activity.
Well, you're spot on, Lee, relative to the intention here. It is indeed one of the first experiences that many girls have in this country to get, if you will, their ABCs of selling and of financial and business literacy. The intent is really for girls to learn about setting goals, about time management, about people skills, about how to deal with rejection. It's about financial and business literacy. And so the girls are indeed always supposed to be engaged in some part of the transaction. Now, certainly we're delighted with the enthusiasm and support that we get from parents and all of the volunteers. And in our council alone, there are 42,000 girls and 18,000 volunteers. And as I said earlier, we will distribute 4 million cookies throughout our 34 county jurisdiction in our council. So it takes a lot of folks. And what's really been interesting is, if done properly, the parents actually learn a lot, too, about the organization and planning. And if you want to take it to a higher order, you can learn a whole lot about supply chain management when you're moving 4 million boxes of cookies
Absolutely.
Around.
But you guys do a lot more than just sell the cookies. What are some other aspects of your program, and how has it changed since the Girl Scouts organization was first founded?
Sure, and thanks for the question, Stone. In fact, one of the things that is not very well known, and we are on a mission to communicate more effectively, is something known as the Girl Scout Leadership Institute. It is an institute that is in Washington, D.C. It is an independent arm of the Girl Scouts. We often say, sometimes we worry that because it's called the Girl Scout Research Institute, people think we're only studying Girl Scouts. Indeed, we're not. Our goal is to be the voice for all girls. And that particular institute is made up of independent researchers, child educators, and psychologists, all who have done primary research. There's been 22 studies done in the independent studies done in the last 10 years. They're all focused on how do we develop self-esteem in girls? How do girls learn best? And how do we truly develop leadership skills that will stand the test of time? All of that research, which again is just 10 years old, has gone in to developing all of the programs today, which are really founded or predicated on five key programmatic areas, which include financial and business literacy, a healthy living, healthy lifestyles, environmental stewardship, and citizenship. So there's a true method to the madness, and from that we have a lot of outcomes measurements that keep us honest to make sure that we're really developing those skills and delivering on what we're committing.
Now, I know there's a correlation between successful women and their participation in sports. Is there a similar correlation between their participation in Girl Scouts and successful women?
There sure is, Lee. In fact, again, a little known fact is that 80% of women business owners and female executives were Girl Scouts, and about 70% of all female legislators were Girl Scouts, and virtually every single woman who has flown in space as an astronaut was a Girl Scout. So there is indeed a clear correlation, and we again are on a mission to make sure people know that.
Now, is there a reverse correlation between reality stars and Girl Scouts?
Well, you might be interested to know the woman that just won the $1 million on the latest edition of Survivor. When she received her money, she said, "I credit a lot of my ability to navigate this whole experience to my courage, confidence, and character, which was developed in Girl Scouts." Good. So there you go.
Speak a little bit more, if you would, to this idea of financial literacy. What's compelling you guys to focus on that, and what kind of results are you seeing in the early going with that?
Well, it's both financial literacy, but of course, everybody to be a productive citizen in this world needs to understand how to manage their finances. But it's much broader than that. In fact, our former CEO has written a book by the name of Tough Cookies, Kathy Cloninger.
I like it. Tough
Cookies.
That's
indeed.
A cool title.
Yeah. She writes about the fact that if the United States of America is going to maintain its position in the world, and if we're going to all be focused on collectively solving some of these significant challenges, whether it be education, whether it be, you know, global marketization, we're going to have to draw deeply from our talent pool, from our entire talent pool. It's about financial and business literacy. It's also about the United States of America trying to reclaim its position in the field of science, technology, engineering, and math, and that is one of our big focuses. In fact, more than 50% of our badge programs have an element of STEM in it, and it's because, in fact, I think it was Soledad O'Brien on one of her recent stories called Don't Fail Me, talks about the hundreds of thousands of jobs, notwithstanding our economic environment today and how many people are unemployed, but the hundreds of thousands of jobs in this country alone that go unfilled because our citizens are no longer qualified. And then when you look at the landscape and recognize that there are many girls early on in elementary school and in junior high school who show great promise in those fields, and yet they don't stick with them. I call it the age of or hitting the car fumes and the perfume stage. And all of a sudden, it's not cool anymore. But here we have an underrepresented population who has great skills and talents in those areas. And so in addition to financial and business literacy, we're really committed to helping girls develop and sustain them in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and
math. Can you talk a little bit about this new badge? It's not the badges, I guess, are... our parents
yes.
grew up with anymore.
Indeed. So badges are all about skills development, but in the 21st century, what resonates with today's girls and what's relevant to them are what I call the whys behind the what. So we have a badge for web designing. We have a badge for digital movie maker. We have a badge, again, in the science and technology category that's called the science of style. And that one's really about the science that goes into things like sunscreen. And girls actually can learn how to make their own perfume. So, again, we're making it relevant. It's not just about doing things, but it's about understanding why those things and those skills are so important in our world today.
What badges did you get rid of?
Oh, gosh. I think there was a farming badge that
farming
may not
badge.
Be on the top of the list anymore.
Well, now with organic gardening, you might be able to
bring it back. Yeah.
Well, there is one called the Lavacore badge, and that is all about how do you get fresh food, fresh produce from local communities that are growing this into local communities to sell it. So there you go.
Well, this STEM thing keeps
popping up.
We had someone
every couple
here,
weeks.
Yeah, wasn't it like last week or week before we had the lady with SunTrust and maybe a PR person, and maybe in the same show we had somebody with Harvard Business Review, and we were largely talking about the Girls Get IT program.
Right.
So I think the message is getting out. Now, how did you get into this line of work? What did you do before you did this?
Well, I spent a number of years, I won't tell you how many, but many, many years in the for-profit arena. I started out in banking and finance and then had a 20-plus career in technology and telecommunications. And there was a period of time in my life, my mom was suffering from Alzheimer's and was in the final stages, so I took a leave of absence from my professional career, and she passed away, and I was trying to decide what I wanted to do, and I went back for pay, as they say, and Corn Ferry came calling, and the rest is history, and I am blessed beyond measure to be able to get up and go to work every day and know that we're making a difference in girls' lives.
Can you talk a little bit about that transition from the for-profit world to the nonprofit world? Like, how different is that? You know, from where you started to where you are now?
You know, there are a lot of similarities. There are differences. I might just state right up front that I didn't know that I could work any harder than I had before. But as you can imagine, because there is so much to do, this is a volunteer-based organization and resources are always limited. But I have to tell you, there are a lot of similarities in that in my book, there are more similarities between well-run nonprofits and well-run for-profits than there are differences. It all starts with people, time, and money. The difference is whether you're returning to the mission of a movement or whether you're making a return to shareholders. And the metrics that you need to manage, the goals that you need to set, I always say, 501c3 or a nonprofit is simply a tax status. It's not a business model.
So what can we expect for the next 100 years?
More cookies?
Well, certainly more cookies. We're also looking, again, to leapfrog leadership development. We're also looking to leapfrog people's awareness of all of the benefits that the Girl Scout program offers. I've seen just the look in your eyes and sheer amazement when I've shared some of the statistics.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I think is important to know is only 7.5% of philanthropic dollars go towards girls' programs. And we often look at the trajectory. There was a study done by the White House in 2009 that basically says if we look at around and see women in leadership positions based on the trajectory that we've got since we began to be able to vote, to achieve parity will take us to about the 23rd century. And if I'm remembering my TV correctly, I think that's the year that Star Trek is scheduled to launch. And the reality is today's girls really deserve much more than that, and they are capable of much more than that. So the next 100 years is really all about sharing the message and securing the support to make sure that Girl Scouts remains relevant and resonates with today's girls. And we want to make sure that we're viewed as not just nice, but very necessary.
Now, would you characterize Girl Scouts as underfunded? Do you desperately need money? Or are you are you aggressively seeking different sources of funding? Where are you in that continuum?
So whenever anybody asks me, you know, what are the things that you lose sleep about at night and what are your key priorities? Priorities are always soliciting and identifying more volunteer support. We have girls on waiting lists all the time.
So you need the people to manage the groups of girls rather than the girls themselves?
Well, we need lots of volunteers for a whole host of things. In fact, I would encourage anybody that's interested in volunteering to send us a note at enews@gsgatl.org. Again, that's enews@gsgatl.org. We're also encouraging people that have been part of the movement, the alumni, to come back in the year of the 100th. It's ET, phone home, we need you. And so we'd like them to visit our Girl Scouts of Greater Atlanta Facebook page where they can share some of their memories. But the second thing is always more funding. You would be surprised if you looked at the statistical analysis outside of the earned income that is generated from the cookie program, that Girl Scouts is one of the lower funded organizations as it relates to pure contributed income.
Is it because they think like, oh, you sell a ton of Girl Scout cookies, so we don't have to donate?
Yes, it is blessing and it's a curse, as they say.
Because it's probably not that high of a margin, I wouldn't think.
Well, people perceive that we have all we need because it is an iconic brand and because we sell so many cookies, but they forget that there's a cost of goods sold. And then the girls are also earning a percentage of that profit so that they can fund their own troop activities, which does indeed create this perception that we are independent as it relates to how we operate.
And those Samoas aren't cheap.
I love the Samoas. I always at least get one box of Samoas, one box of Thin Mints. What's your favorite order?
Those are the two.
That's the Samoa two you get too?
Right. What's the most popular?
Every year it's neck and neck between Thin Mints and Samoas, but I think last year Thin Mints just eked it out again.
Well, now you tie in with ice cream, right? Isn't there some of the ice cream? I'll use your stuff?
Yes, you've been a good shopper, I see there, Lee. For a short period of time during cookie season or maybe right after, you can imagine that there's no waste in what we do. And so all of those broken cookies in the bakery get put to good use.
Nice.
And they find their way into ice cream that you will see in your local grocers.
Well, we're going to do our part here. The Junior Achievement Candy Bowl, maybe we can move it over to be
the
Junior Achievement / Girl Scout Cookie Bowl.
There you go.
There's an idea.
We can make that happen.
Yeah. You talked about a Facebook page a little while ago.
Yes.
So I'm curious, what impact do you feel like social media technology has had on the Girl Scouts organization?
Well, all of us, whether it be our council or the other 112 councils nationwide, clearly recognize that to be where girls are and to give girls what they need in ways that they want, we have to be technology proficient. So yes, we have a Twitter site, we have a Facebook page, we're on LinkedIn, we're on all the social media sites. And just like everybody else, though, the time and experience required to make sure people are tracking and participating in that is always the larger challenge.
Now, Stone mentioned that we have an affiliation with Junior Achievement. How, and we do that because of the business involvement, how does a business get involved with the Girl Scouts?
Well, my good friend Jack Harris at Junior Achievement, we actually deliver Junior Achievement programs through Girl Scouts. You know, one of the things that's so important today as we look around, whether it's our nonprofit or other nonprofits, is collaboration. We may have the facilities and Junior Achievement might use them to deliver a program, or we might, deliver a Girl Scout program, but at a Boys and Girls Club. So all of the nonprofits are really looking very intentionally to see how we can collaborate together and make those limited expense dollars go even further.
Well, before we let you go, let's make sure one more time that our listeners know how to get in touch with you, whether they want to be personally involved in leading these young ladies and or they want to help on the financial side of things.
So there's a couple of ways to do that. Obviously, we've talked about the Girl Scouts of Greater Atlanta Facebook page. Specifically, if you're interested in volunteering, you could reach us two different ways. Our website is www.gsgatl.org. Again, www.gsgatl.org. Can find a whole bunch of information on the website, but also enews, enews, E-N-E-W-S, at gsgatl.org. You can reach us related to volunteering or basically asking any question you might have.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. Love to have you come back, maybe with a leader, a volunteer, maybe one or two of the young ladies. I think that could be for a fun show. What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll make sure it happens. And I tell you what, I'll bring you some Savannah Smiles. That is the new cookie coming out this year in celebration of our 100th anniversary. So if you like lemon, you might need to purchase a few more boxes.
Okay, terrific. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us for a little while we visit our other guests?
I'd be delighted to. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah. So that's fun stuff. That's more than I ever knew about the Girl Scout organization.
Yes,
how about you?
She did a great job.
So we're going to make that happen. We'll get that put together. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have a gentleman who is Grand Poobah, the CEO, the big man over at Tulik Systems, mm-hmm. and that is Mr. Lewis. I'm going to screw up this last name. Lewow?
Close. Lewow.
Lewow. Mm-hmm. But at least it's got that wow in there. Lewis Lewow.
I should add a wow to my name.
You should. I'm going to start calling you Lewow.
There you go.
Well, welcome to the show,
Thank
Lewis.
You. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So Tulik Systems, Inc., this whole conversation around IT and technology, not mm-hmm. foreign to you at all that
not
we just
all.
Had.
Not at all. And yet I'm so technologically challenged, it's amazing. That's why we have people who know all this stuff.
So what does your outfit do?
We are a long-standing hosting service in the city of Atlanta. We have our own data center at 55 Marietta Street, which is what's known in the business as a carrier hotel. Not to get too deep, but that's where all the bandwidth providers kind of coalesce, and you can get all kinds of different bandwidth there. And we control close to 10,000 square feet, and we make our data center available for corporations, individuals who don't want to have the expense or hassle of maintaining their own servers on their own site.
So what do we control, Lee? What would you say we control
anything.
In our empire?
Not
anywhere near 10,000 feet.
Not even close. So now, who are some of your clients?
Interestingly enough, as a data center, I cannot disclose
it's
that.
It's confidential?
It's totally confidential. And I can give you ideas of clients that we work with. We're very heavily involved in financial institutions. We have certain certifications that we have to meet in order to be able to serve that community. We also are doing a lot of work with doctors, the medical professions. We have to be HIPAA compliant in order to do that.
Right.
So those are some of the markets or
but it's for people all over the world, right? Organizations all over the world.
We serve local in Atlanta. We serve people all over the country, all over the world.
Now, is there any reason that somebody like in England would want to use your service? Like, is there a benefit to them for being here in the United States?
In certain situations, it may be a question, as I mentioned before, about the certifications that we hold, and they'll meet certain standards that they need. And also other situations, we can serve as the disaster recovery center for a company that's based, let's say, in England or really any place else. They have the key factor in this technology or technological area is something called redundancy.
Uh-huh.
The disaster happens, and if your servers are wiped out, you're out of business. But if you've replicated all that information at a different site where it was not affected by such any kind of disaster, then you can operate.
So redundancy means that there's an exact copy of it somewhere else?
Exact or near as exact
as possible.
Exactly.
So data going back and forth, being shared, being able to access it. I mean, it's built a whole new world for us. On my little Kindle here, mm-hmm. I can watch a movie when I want to.
Yes, you can.
How much faster does it need to be? Are we about as fast as we need to be, and now we can focus on something else? Or is it going to keep getting faster and faster and faster?
I'm sure you probably remember there was a time in your life, I know there was one in mine, when I ended up buying a computer that had a 20 megabit hard drive and said, well, that's all I'll ever need in my life.
Right, right.
Okay. The idea is that as we distribute different types of data, and as that data becomes more and more detailed, as we're no longer just streaming audio. We're streaming high-definition audio, high-definition video. Those files, obviously, to have the detail, the files become bigger and bigger. Things are going to move a lot faster, you know, and you're going to be transmitting a lot more. Everything it increases and grows.
But is it, where's the bottleneck right now? Because it seems like in some countries you hear like, wow, they can transmit way better than us. We're like in the dark ages in terms of how fast data can, you know, kind of go from place to place.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I haven't heard that per se. I know, for instance, at our data center, we've got what's called, we've got 12 gig E coming in, okay?
Right.
And then being able to be sent out. That is more bandwidth than most individual third world countries have throughout their entire
that's
country.
That's a lot of gigaboogies, right. 12 that's gig E, in case you don't know.
There you go. So the bottleneck sometimes can be something as simple as the last mile.
Right.
And it's just everything transmits great, everything's going there, but when it gets off to the off-ramp,
right.
Okay, to get to your particular computer, well, there's a traffic jam and there's a red light.
Is that me and my device, or is that the telecommunications?
The reality is it could be both, mm-hmm. you know, or either or none and something else entirely. Okay. What we try to do is we establish, we work with companies and seeing how they want to transmit data, how they want to replicate the data, and come up with different ways of doing it. It could be something as simple as utilizing the internet and delivering it that way. It could be something as establishing virtual private networks that, you know, tunnel directly from their server to the
right.
you know, to the location. excuse me. In many cases, we're also working with several international radio and television stations and transcoding their information. We're capturing their broadcasts from the satellite.
Right.
We're transcoding it for all different multi-screen formats, iPad, iPhone,
right.
Android, and then we're transmitting it that way through, and people are receiving it through their mobile devices.
So we're broadcasting live right now over
right.
the internet. Most of the people who will hear this interview at this point in time mm-hmm. will be when they're darn well ready to hear it. You
right.
know, they'll be hitting a bucket of balls or what
mm-hmm.
have you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a phenomenon that we've observed and, quite frankly, have chosen to capitalize on to serve the communities that we want
right.
to serve.
Exactly.
Do you believe that as we continue to go forward, we have all these new technologies, will more and more people be able to listen to programs like this easier, like in their car, like you do traditional radio? Is it going in that direction?
That's the key. The key is that, particularly, and let's take radio as the major example, because I don't necessarily want people watching TV in the car as they're driving. Okay. However, in order to be considered a quote unquote competitive radio station, okay, you have to be able to reach the audience in their mobile moments, okay? AM drive, morning drive, afternoon drive. The iPhone, Androids with, you know, I know you guys are on tunein.com.
Right, right.
Okay, and other you know, stations have their own apps or, you know, you can just type in the URL and start receiving it. Gives you the ability to compete against all the major radio stations because you are at the same venue and can be accessed in the same venue as those.
And so that's coming. I mean, that's going to be a reality.
It's here now. In fact, that's where we do a lot of our business, is helping those particular stations reach those audiences and utilize our facilities to maximize their audience reach and their audience potential.
Well, I'm going to have to get a better co-host if we're going to
get
that kind of
really?
Exposure.
I'm bringing you down. What are the services that you guys typically are providing nowadays?
Right now we're doing everything.
Because you guys have been around for a while. You're one of the oldest agencies here in town.
Quick quick synopsis of our history. We started back in 94 when it was, you know, you made sales calls and it's, what's the internet?
Right.
You know, and we were one of the original, quote-unquote, interactive agencies. And we worked with companies like State Farm Insurance and Darden Restaurants, which was Red Lobster and still is Red Lobster and Olive Garden. And we created what you would consider to be redlobster.com, you know,
right.
V1.
Right.
And we brought, you know, companies to the internet.
Sure.
Excuse me. The company grew, got very involved in finance and hospitality. And that was really the key verticals for us. Company went public. .com bomb hit 2000, company went private. One of the things that what we had expanded into is into cable television and ISPs. We created, much like what Facebook is today. We had applications where if you were Time Warner, who was our customer, you were selling cable or internet access for $50 a month as opposed to AOL.
Right.
But it was through your cable modem. It was faster. But people said, well, it's $50 versus $20.
Right.
So
that's ridiculous.
Exactly. Right. I just get it. It's the same internet.
Right.
And speed really wasn't really a question. So we created a application that where they could actually have their own website and without having to do HTML programming, could pick a template, put in graphics, put stuff up, have their own personal website. So we actually at one point was were housing over 500,000 personal websites for Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And then we built a network that was so good for our customers that we said, well, you know, we can actually now go out and host, you know, sell our co-location services. So that's what we do. So we do co-location. We do web development. We do search engine marketing and consultation on SEO, SEM, how to get found on the search
right.
engines. And our big item right now is streaming.
Streaming. And that's video, audio.
Video, audio, and being able to deliver it to the
hologram. Multi-screen. You guys doing hologram yet?
When it comes, when it comes, we'll be ready to do that.
Well, now some, if not all of those areas strike me as extremely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys go to market, differentiate yourself? Is it because you were the first and the biggest, or are you doing something special, unique?
Number one, we being around for a while, we also have a pretty large client base.
Right.
So as we bring new products to marketplace, we always solicit our client base. In certain cases, the products that we build and we bring to marketplace have already been kind of researched because a client said to us, could we do this? Could we do that? Okay. You know, we cold call, we do social
marketing. You still got to get out there and do your traditional sales and
absolutely.
Marketing stuff.
Have you tried cookies? I hear that they work extremely
actually,
well.
Actually, I've got my niece is sending, and I'm big on Thin Mints.
No, but maybe for your organization, come up with your own line of cookies. That's what
I don't want to compete against.
He doesn't want to compete with Maryland.
That's a marketing machine that I will not try to topple.
But maybe you could help them stream some stuff about their cookies
well,
and
I'd
then
be happy to
work
do
out
that.
Some kind of
have
deal.
You, have you thought about the All Cookie Channel?
I like it. The Cookie Channel.
There you go.
There's a lot of innovation that happens right here in these walls.
Absolutely.
Right? So what's next for you guys that you're allowed to share? What are you going to be working on this year?
Right now, what we're actually looking at is being able to take our services and actually create affiliate or partner relationships. And whereas the marketplace has created a need for entrepreneurism, people are now being more entrepreneurial because jobs may not be there. We talk to people all the time who actually want to represent our products into a marketplace, and we recognize the fact that we can sell very well, but we can't be everywhere. And if they have ways of being able to reach people that we can't, we'd like to talk to them about that. So it's actually trying to reach out and find new ways to market what we do. And we feel affiliate programs and partnerships with companies is probably the way to go, and that's what we're looking at.
And are you interested in having those conversations now?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what's the best way for folks that are interested in that conversation or who may be interested in the services you're already providing? What's the best way for them to reach out and
best way to reach me is the simple LL, at Tulix, TULIX.com. You can reach me there. There is also info at Tulix.com. And I give you the phone number, which is everybody get it, grab a pen and paper, 404. But not if you're driving. 404-584-5035, and I am at extension 5075, 5075.
The next time we have a conversation with him on the air, I want the phone to somehow be like 800-555-LOWOW.
Actually,
I want that LOWOW in there somehow.
And somebody else grab that. I'm sorry.
Well, hey, thanks so much for joining. How about hanging out with us while we visit with the remainder of our guests?
Be very happy to.
Terrific. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is a gentleman who is no stranger to the High Velocity Radio Show, Business Radio X, or even the platform. Lee, Derek Van Dam is in the house.
There you go.
Welcome to the show, Derek.
Good to be here.
Well, we are glad to have you, man. What's happening over there at Swipe for Change? Get us caught up.
Well, as you know, but maybe the other guests don't, I'll take a minute to explain a little bit about Swipe for Change and what we do. Swipe for Change is basically a company that first and foremost is a fundraising engine for nonprofit organizations. And we're not trying to just create one-off donations. We're trying to create consistent and recurring donation streams, something that nonprofits can count on coming in for the foreseeable future. And when we designed the business, we looked for the best avenue that we thought that would allow us to provide that steady stream of income. And the way that we found work the best is by leveraging merchant accounts. Okay, we go out to businesses, and if they are socially inclined and would like to give back to an organization that's important to them, what we basically do is we go in and trade out their existing merchant account, i.e. their credit card processing, for a new account that's at the same price or better than the old. So what that means is the business isn't paying anything to work with us. Once we have them set up, from that point going forward, every single time that a customer walks through those doors and pays that business with a debit or credit card, a donation gets made on behalf of the business to that business's favorite nonprofit. And because people come into these businesses every day and pay with debit and credit card every day, that money continues to come in. And, you know, it could be years and years and years of which that happens. So it's something that we're very excited about. We're getting tremendous leverage here in the local Atlanta market. It's been very well received from pretty much everybody we've told it to. You know, the customers, they love it because they would prefer to do business with a business that gives back. The businesses love it because we're basically giving them an opportunity to give to people they care about at no cost to them. Plus, we also provide them some free cause marketing collateral that they can put in their door and at their point of sale that lets them know that that the business is the kind that gives back. And that goes a long way with customer loyalty as well as with bringing new people into the door. And of course, the nonprofits like it because it's basically for them an ability to bring in some regular income that comes in that's not seasonal like many of the other donations tend to be and isn't dependent upon the state of the economy. As a matter of fact, we think the worse the economy is, the more people tend to pay by credit card. So
certainly the way it happens at the Payton House, I can tell you that for a fact.
So that's just the basic overview. Obviously, you know, we have a show, of course, here on Business Radio X, which we're really excited about. It's certainly allowed us to offer a platform to a number of nonprofit organizations.
You can really help them out, right? You can give them some exposure and that
exactly
kind of thing.
Right.
You bring them on, you
yes.
ask them to talk about. So you guys are really utilizing that platform to serve your community. I think that's great.
Yeah, when we originally started the company, it was designed to help the nonprofit, and we thought that financially would be the best way that we could help. And then when, of course, we stumbled across your show and found out about an opportunity with the station, we discovered that it now offers us an additional way to be able to help the nonprofits that we're serving, that to be able to give them that platform to talk about their organization, their history, challenges that they have, upcoming events, and ways that people can help.
What are some of the nonprofits you've been able to spotlight thus far?
So far, we've had a number of different ones on. We've had Hope Atlanta, which is also known as Traveler's Aid, though they're in the process of changing the name over. They were our first show. They were excellent guests. We couldn't even believe that as that show continued to go on, how we kept peeling back the onion and found out more and more than that organization did. One of the people that was there from the organization actually learned some things that day about what they did. We found that interesting. We've also had organizations like GCAP on. We've had escaping me. Okay, we've had Joseph Blumberg from who's part of Men's Health and Wellness. He was on the show, and we've also had who else? Well, we had a number of different people that support the industry. That's something as well that. So, for example, we had a gentleman by the name of Scott Trudeau come in, who has his own company called Trudeau Design, And he also knew some people within the Georgia Humanities Council, and he brought them along with him, which was an excellent show because obviously what we're trying to do here is we're trying to talk about corporate responsibility. We're trying to talk about how businesses, regular for-profit businesses, can help the nonprofit industry. We're hoping to start, you know, a bit of a movement.
Well, I want to ask you some questions about that. And with your permission, I'm going to ask Lee to open Marilyn's mic back up because I'd like to get your perspective on this, too. This whole idea of cause marketing is very attractive to me, but I can see trying to navigate between the ditches and not become too mercenary and exploit, maybe a little bit of an extreme. You don't want to exploit, you know, the Girl Scouts to further your cause, but yet there's a perfectly legitimate, or I suspect, there's this perfectly legitimate space where you can serve the Girl Scouts and serve your for-profit motive, and everybody wins, and it's ethical, and it's pure, and it's right. I don't even know what question to ask, but I just speak to that.
You buying that, Marilyn?
Sure. Well, I think it has a lot to do, Stone, with making sure that you've got the synergy, to use an overused phrase. as Derek was talking, I was thinking about the fact that when you look at what Girl Scouts do, and that's just what they're doing in terms of their communities. In our council alone, our 60,000 membership returns conservatively 1.5 million hours of community service back into the community. They're often the girls that are doing the backpack drives for our underserved kids to make sure that they have the school supplies necessary to go back to school. They're often the girls that are teaching English as a second language, who are proficient in Spanish. They're often the girls that are restocking the food pantry shelves. I mean, we talked about STEM, yes, we talked about financial literacy. We didn't talk a whole lot about the citizenship part, but our mission is to develop girls of courage, confidence, and character who make the world a better place. And the piece that comes after that comma is every bit as important as the first part. So in partnering with an organization like Derek's, the Swipe Change, to me, it's all about, again, collaboration. How do we invest in things that will return more to our communities than the actual cost? And we talk to the United Way all the time. I tell Milton Little, who's the head of United Way, that if you invest $1 in Girl Scouts, I can show you conservatively where we were returning $1.88 back to the community. So to me, it's about finding those synergies and making sure we cultivate the message in a way that connects the dots for folks that they don't automatically connect.
So what kind of questions, tell me a little bit about these conversations that are happening on your show that you do at Business Radio X, because I sat in on the one with the Traveler's Aid.
Right.
But tell me a little bit about those conversations. What are you guys talking about? Mostly about their
mission,
about their organization, their mission, just helping them get the word out?
Exactly right. It's a platform for them to be able to really talk about anything that they want, but usually we'll come up with the ability for them to talk about the history of the organization, how it started, who started it, what kind of programs they currently offer right now, how they're basically helping their community. We'll talk about upcoming events. That's a big one, because a lot of times this is a perfect point for them to get some PR for a big drive that they've got. Most nonprofits generally tend to have one or two big drives a year. The cookies would be an example of that. There's kind of a window of time. They don't sell it all year round, so you kind of build up some hype for when it does come out. And a lot of organizations have their own. You know, we had a woman on there that has her own charity basketball tournament, and that's kind of a big one, to be able to say, hey, it's coming up, and we want to be able to really get some excitement around that.
And create the shareable content that they're able to then leverage to their Facebook and all
exactly
their social
right.
media outlets.
Exactly right, because it's something that really helps explain what goes on within the organization, and some people like to listen rather than see something in writing or otherwise. And you know, it's a great way for us to try to help build up some support for them from a volunteer standpoint,
right,
as well as a financial standpoint.
Right.
I mean, what we're doing, we think, can certainly help them a lot, but their individual donors have the ability to, you know, really do a great job for these nonprofits.
Well, and I know what happens here accidentally a lot, and would probably happen on purpose if we'd put a little bit of thought and energy behind it, is you get two or three people from different organizations together in the same room,
Right. And you put a couple brains together, you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, I'm delighted that you guys are enjoying some early success.
We are.
With that show. And it's going to be fun to continue to listen to that. So I asked the same question of our last guest. Where's your focus going to be in 2012 at Swipe for Change? Where are you going to put your efforts?
Well, we're continuing to grow our social media platform. That's a big thing that we want to do to help get the word out about what it is that we do. Because we really are trying to engage the nonprofit community more so that they realize who we are, how we can help them, and we could build strategic partnerships with them to help further their causes. So obviously that's one branch of what we do is working on those relationships and trying to solidify them. We go to a number of different events like the Georgia Center for Nonprofits and the Association of Fundraising Professionals. Those are two big ones here in Atlanta. But the other big part of what we're going to be doing is a much more aggressive outreach toward the different businesses that help bring in money for the nonprofits. That's a big focus for 2012. We're about to begin a major calling program where we're going to reach out to a lot more businesses than we can, because up to this point, we've really pretty much just been going by word of mouth. It's been referral based, and we have had a fair amount of traction with that, but there's hundreds of thousands of businesses in this area that we will very slowly get to if we try to do it all by word of mouth. So we're going to begin some calling out to businesses, telling them what we do. We've already begun with some mailers, and we're going to continue moving in that vein. And of course, once the cause marketing gets rolling, and that the part with the where we're going out on behalf of a nonprofit specifically, we think that's really going to work.
And you're giving them specific tools that help them with the cause marketing. So that's going to be exciting to see more and more of those unfold.
Yeah, so
that's great.
So what we're doing is that with a lot of, there are some nonprofits that work very closely with us. There are some that just want to receive passive income, and that's fine.
Right.
But there are other ones that take a more active role. And the nonprofits that take a more active role are the ones that certainly see a better financial benefit, because there are often a number of people on their board that are business owners that would love to find another way to give to the organization.
Right.
There are a number of people that donate to them that own businesses, and this is a great way to add to that number. And we feel that it's also a lot easier for us to go out and approach the business marketplace if we're doing so on behalf of an organization. So, visiting Nurse Health Systems was one that was on with us. They're a great organization, been around for a long time. You know, what we want to do is partner up with them and then reach out to doctor's offices specifically for the purpose of helping them. We're in negotiations with Habitat for Humanity, where we can go out and reach out to hardware stores or contractors on behalf of them. And by doing it more targeted in that way, that's a much smarter way to reach out and help to raise money for these specific organizations. So,
well, I got to tell you, if my orthodontist were working with you, we could put you over the edge right now. no question in my mind. How can our listeners reach you and learn more about Swipe for Change?
All right. Well, there's two ways. Our website obviously has a tremendous amount of information about our company. You can go to www.swipeforchange.com. And the other thing is you can call in to we have a toll-free number. It's 1-800-219-5727. And there's a variety of different departments that you can speak to, but if you want to speak to me personally, you can dial extension 814.
And just ask for Derek Wow, right?
Sure.
New name.
Wow is
everyone's
my middle
name.
Well, nicely done. Thanks for joining us again.
Great.
Man.
It's great to be on the show.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, three shining examples of courage, confidence, and character, Miss Marilyn Midyet, Lewis Lee Wow, and Derek Van Dam, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.